This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Audiences are demanding more authentic stories about people with disabilities. In his essay this month for our website, WVXU.org, film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi says film and television representation has been changing, but still has room for improvement. He joins me now to talk about the importance of being seen on the big and small screens. Welcome back, T.T.
Great. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
It's always great to have you. So your essay this month is focused on representation in film and television. Let's talk about the limited representation of people with disabilities in the stories that get told. What kind of challenges have you encountered over the years as you've been looking for those stories?
Well, I mean, I think part of it for me starts with being the artistic director of the Over the Rhine International Film Festival. And when I stepped into that role, first as a programmer and then kind of assuming the top programming spot, if you will, it was really this thought of, okay, we can find documentaries about people with disabilities, and there are certain tropes that we're used to seeing in those. It is overcoming the disability, or, you know, they're going to be sort of the tugging at the heartstrings kind of approach to things that, while, yes, you are getting people's stories out, you're not necessarily always doing it in the most interesting or challenging kinds of ways that you can and that we have seen for other marginalized groups. So it's kind of like, okay, how do we figure this out? And as a Black person who grew up watching films in the 80s and 90s, you know, I wasn't always satisfied with what Black representation looked like either. But there was always this sense that we heard, well, if you don't like the films that are being, the stories that are being told, then tell your own. And we obviously have seen a dramatic change because if there are more people that are out there telling their own stories or different kinds of stories, that sometimes can be challenging for the disability community. So there needs to be a stronger sense and maybe a stronger sense of allyship in making sure that if we're going to tell these stories, let's make sure that we are going to definitely include people with disabilities in those conversations behind the scenes, getting started, bring in some filmmakers with some really challenging, interesting ways of shooting and reconfiguring those stories. But then also, like I said, that authenticity has to be there. And we need to be as intentional about that as we can.
Well, in this trope that you referred to, the kind of overcoming disability, it's just a small slice of a person's lived experience, too. Isn't that part of the problem? It's like, you know, there's a lot of joy. There's a lot of day-to-day
right.
living that people do, no matter who they are or what their disabilities. And that often gets left out when we're just looking at that piece of the story.
Right. I feel like there's this sense from distributors and maybe even filmmakers to a certain extent that it's kind of like, okay, there's a hook in here that people are going to respond to. And it's easy to make sure that you're going to give people that hook that will feel familiar to them. But that familiarity is not necessarily always a great thing. We need to also understand and be aware of the fact that, yes, the lives that we are being exposed to are multidimensional, are intersectional. I mean, that's the other part of it for me, again, as someone who is programming a festival that is focusing on this, but also trying to make sure that we incorporate disability into these larger conversations about diversity, equity, and inclusion. How do you find ways to make sure that you can spotlight disability and spotlight the person, but also sort of, again, let's get this holistic look at their experiences and how, if we really do it right, their experiences will look just like mine or just like yours, and that's where we all kind of grow together and move forward together.
There are films and TV shows that are exploring other aspects of life for people with disabilities. It's not anymore just this kind of, I'm overcoming this hurdle that's in my life. What's this new Netflix release coming out called The Remarkable Life of Eblen? Talk to us about that.
Yes, I'm terribly excited about this film. The Over the Rhine International Film Festival is sponsoring a screening of it tomorrow night at the Kenwood Theater. There are still tickets available.
Okay.
It starts at 6:30. I have to let everyone know about that piece of it. But I also want to make sure that people understand that this is one of those films that I'm talking about that hits at intersectionality in some very different ways. It is the story of a young gamer in Norway who has a degenerative muscle disorder. And towards the end of his life, he's really only able to use his fingers to move and communicate. And what he did, he had a whole life that his family did not know about online in World of Warcraft. He was meeting people and playing the game, but as part of that experience, he was also talking with people and getting to know them and becoming friends and establishing romantic relationships and ties and helping people. But he never let them know that he had a disability. So all they saw of him was this Evelyn character who is a big, strong, virile fighter in the World of Warcraft. And I just love this film because literally the second half of the film takes place in World of Warcraft. It's animated. And you get to see, because they had all of this content, this dialogue, and these exchanges that he had with people over the years that were saved on servers. So they were able to take those conversations and animate them and bring them to life. And it is the most joyous celebration of life that you're ever going to see. And again, it hits at this intersectionality because, yes, he was someone with a disability, but he was also part of this gaming community, which is not necessarily a marginalized community. It's just a niche kind of audience that's out there. But he found a place for himself in that world, and not just for himself. He was able to really help other people deal with their own struggles in their lives as well, too. And that's the piece for me that I feel like audiences need to see and appreciate the impact that someone with a disability can have beyond their own experiences.
Sure. And he got to decide what defined him in that way, too.
Yes, he really did. And I think that's the other piece of it, too. It's, you know, we struggle, and I know I still struggle with this. Are you using person-first language? Are you focusing on the disability? And if you talk to people in the community, you're going to get a range of responses in terms of which of those really is the best or most accurate way of dealing with it, which means that at the end of the day, you have to take it on an individual basis. You talk to someone, they tell you how they want to be identified, how they want to be seen, and you have to respect that. You know, in much the same way I've told this story a lot. Like, I don't go by African American anymore. I would rather be considered Black because even though I've just done 23andMe and I know now that I, what my African roots are, I am so far removed from that. That didn't feel like something that I could kind of own anymore. And I wouldn't have thought about that 10 or 15 years ago, but I have now seized control of that for myself. And I think, again, members of the disability community are probably in their own ways trying to figure this out and hoping that when they tell people, that people are going to listen and respect it.
Yeah. I know you just mentioned that this screening is going to be happening in Kenwood. You said tomorrow for somebody, if you're not listening to this on exactly live, that's Wednesday, July 24th.
Yes, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yes.
And you said that's at 6:30, did you say?
It starts at 6:30. There are still tickets available. The exciting thing about it is we are doing this in four theaters because we kind of knew this is part of Disability Pride Month. It's getting towards the end of the month. We wanted a big showcase screening, and this film won awards at Sundance earlier this year, which was really exciting. And Netflix gave us the opportunity to screen it as part of this event. It is not streaming on Netflix yet and will probably not stream until the fall. So we are getting this at least 2 to 3 months before anyone else is going to get to see it. It's I believe it's now finished with this festival run as well. So they are just kind of waiting and getting everything together to release it. So this is a great opportunity for audiences to have a chance not only to see the film, but we have a couple of surprises along the way too that are connected to the film that if you come, I know you will enjoy the full evening package that we've set up for everyone.
Okay. Well, that film is a documentary. There are also lots of scripted films and TV shows to talk about that you cover in your essay, both in terms of the stories they tell and the actors who bring those stories to life. I want to start with the 2021 film Coda. Talk to us about what that was about for folks who haven't seen it.
Yeah, Coda, that was probably the most challenging film for me to write about as part of this list because the OTR International Film Festival brought that in 2021. It was our closing night film, Washington Park. We had a full lawn full of people. It was also a Sundance title that had done really well. Apple bought it at Sundance. It was a remake of, I believe, a French film that looked at the experiences of a young woman who has grown up in a family, both of her parents and her brother are all deaf. She is not deaf. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, she's also discovering the fact that she might be musically inclined. She likes to sing. She discovers that someone thinks she has a really nice voice. And she's got to figure out how to handle kind of growing into the person that she wants to be, but also not feeling like she has to let go of her family ties and connections as well. The French film, at the time that it was made, was a bit of a sensation, did really well. But the problem was the parents, in particular, as two characters, were played by performers who were not deaf. And obviously that would not be able to happen today at all, which was exciting about the newer version of the film that came out. But then the other piece, and again, I was terribly excited about this film when I saw it at Sundance. I wanted to bring it here much the same way I'm doing with The Remarkable Life of Evelyn. And I was thrilled that we brought it. And then all of a sudden it went on that amazing run during award season, won 3 Oscars. And I was at a panel about a year and a half after it screened and won the Oscars, and someone as part of it was an accessibility panel, and they were talking about the idea that, you know, as much as everyone loved that film, if you're a member of the deaf community and you look at the young actress who plays the daughter in the film, she is not signing like someone who has been raised within a deaf family.
Mm.
I wouldn't know that.
Sure.
Most of us watching that film are not going to know that. And it doesn't necessarily have to change our impression of the film. But when you do hear that, you do have to acknowledge that, okay, yeah, there's a blind spot that I have about this and how I need to be more cognizant of what that might look like, which means that, you know, the next time a film like this comes out, I need to find someone from that community to be able to say, how did you feel about this? You know, and that's part of what I feel like I do, not only as, you know, an artistic director of a festival, but also as a critic. I want to find out what other people think about films. So it does mean that, yeah, I need to be more aware and be willing to say, I don't know this community that well, or I know a little bit about this community, but I'd love to find out more. Let me see if this is really authentic and accurate. Because in the same way, I would hope that people would have asked me about that, again, about those black films from the 80s and 90s. Is this really your experience? Then I could have said, no, that's not my experience. It's an all right portrayal, maybe, but it's not mine. Mm-hmm. And then we could have a conversation about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about how films and TV shows are changing the way they portray people with disabilities. One of the stars of the film Coda was Marlee Matlin. She was the mom in the film. She had won an Oscar, it feels like a million years ago, but many years ago in the 80s, for her performance in the 1986 movie Children of a Lesser God. Remind us all what that movie was about.
Yeah, that film, at the time that it came out, she and William Hurt were the two lead characters. He plays a new teacher at a deaf, I believe it was a high school, maybe. And she's a janitor who works at the school who had been there and been a student and was not interested in trying to learn to speak. And there were, you know, these questions about, okay, it's part of the community and it's growing and finding ways to get more integrated into society, is that whole notion of learning how to speak like everyone else, is that going to be as important versus just being able to sign and communicate within your own community and have other people maybe learn sign language so that they could communicate effectively with you? I love that film. I saw it when it came out. I was obviously not a film critic at that time, but I was just a young kid who just loved movies, and I remember seeing that film and being so in awe of Marlee Matlin and that performance, because she was just so dynamic. It did not matter exactly whether you knew every signed word that she was speaking. There was just this energy and passion in every single movement that she had that just let you know that she's communicating, and you know what she's communicating in any given moment. You feel it.
Yeah.
And that was a dynamic performance. And there was a reason why she won the Academy Award for that. There's a reason why she is so special and fun and beautifully human in Coda as the mother. And that's one of those things that, again, it feels like I thought that she was going to have an even bigger career than she ended up having, because that was like such a touch point for me that it's a shame that we never figured out how to really accurately use her as a character actor on screen. And, you know, I'm still hoping that even after Coda, I'm like, wow, she didn't win another Oscar for that, but she was so great in it. Hopefully people are going to rediscover her again and say, wait a minute, there's something there, not just for her, but again, for a whole host of performers who are probably just as dynamic as she is.
Yeah. Well, and one of the huge differences between Children of a Lesser God and Coda, in Children of a Lesser God, Marlee Matlin would sign and somebody basically spoke what she signed. So people in the audience who were not deaf would know what her character was saying. Whereas with Coda, when the parents are signing or the brother is signing, there are subtitles. That seems like a huge and really important difference to let these characters speak for themselves, essentially.
Yeah, that is true. And again, I think that's also another one of those pieces that I just got back from a conference where we were looking at some accessibility issues in terms of film exhibition. And yeah, the other piece that I find interesting about that is the subtitles are there. We talk an awful lot about captioning as well, open versus closed captioning. Those things are actually areas now that is fascinating, especially because of streaming. People are turning on captions as they're watching streaming shows at home. The more people get comfortable doing that, the more that means that in theaters and at festivals like ours, when we caption films that people are watching, we're not going to necessarily run into the same kind of barriers or concerns that audiences used to have. Like, oh, it's going to take away from my enjoyment of the story or what I'm seeing on the screen. No, people are now kind of like this. I may not need them for the same reasons, but they are still allowing me to enjoy and engage with this story in a meaningful way. And they can work beyond that community. They can work for all of us. Mm-hmm. So again, that's another one of those intersectional notions that comes out of this that's really fascinating. And it's sad that it took us this long to really appreciate it. But now that we're here, we all need to lean into it.
Yep. I know my husband and I, we always have those captions on. We always have the subtitles on with everything we watch. We've got some superhero series to talk about, too. I want to start with Daredevil. I'm hoping you can quickly kind of explain the premise of that story and also talk to us about the actor who plays the lead character.
Yeah, really quickly, it's a Marvel Comics story. Matt Murdock is the blind lawyer in the Marvel Universe who, as a young child, was involved in a traffic accident that ended up getting these chemicals spilled on him. He lost his sight. The chemicals ended up heightening his other senses. He goes through a bunch of training and becomes sort of this peak human version of who he is. He's Daredevil, the man without fear. Charlie Cox plays him in the Netflix series, both the Netflix series and soon to be Daredevil Born Again, which will be part of Disney. They've incorporated and made that character canon within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Charlie Cox is not blind, but this is one of those really weird areas and places in terms of accessibility and representation where it would probably be far too difficult to try to train a blind performer to be able to do all of the things that Charlie Cox has to do as Daredevil. Hmm. So at some point, they found ways to, again, lean more into the superheroic aspect of the action and what he has to do. And Cox and I believe the whole team, you know, if you listen to a lot of the background stuff they've talked about, they did a pretty solid job of making sure that they found ways to work with the community to sort of say, are we doing this correctly? What can we do to change to make it more authentic? And it's that effort that probably matters more than the idea that, okay, we can't necessarily have a blind actor in this role. So again, that's one of those pieces where, again, the allies involved in the larger community have to be willing to say, we don't know this. We need to understand this better. How can we make sure that we're portraying this as best we can? And also, all of us have to understand, it's still a comic book story.
Sure.
It is not real life. And we have to bend a little in terms of our own expectations for how this is going to play out, too.
Yeah. You also talk about Echo, a 2024 Disney series. Quickly, who's Echo in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Who plays the character in this series? This is where they really did do a much better job of matching up the character to the comic book.
Yes,
and the actor
they did.
To the comic book.
Yes, and you know the Echo character, who's played by Alacla Cox in the series, is connected in some ways to Daredevil as well. She is deaf, and in this case, an amputee, because Alacla Cox is an amputee. But they found some really fascinating ways to spotlight her abilities and what she could do, and also train her for the fight sequences and everything else to make this work as seamlessly as possible, and more importantly, make her feel and look as heroic and as powerful as Charlie Cox does in Daredevil. So that's, again, I'm a big fan of that. And again, I also love the fact that, again, she is playing someone who is probably closer to an authentic version of who she might be as a person and as an actor, and is letting Hollywood know that, okay, yeah, you can hire me, I can do this job, and I can make it feel just as dynamic as anybody else in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And again, I think that role model that we get from her is probably what's going to help, you know, kind of push this whole movement forward.
Yeah. Very quick final question. We learned last week Cincinnati's a finalist to host the Sundance Film Festival. What kind of shot you think we have?
Of the six cities that are on the list, the fact that we made the final six is very impressive. And I don't count us out at all. I've been here for 25 years. Would not have thought this 25 years ago, but this is the right moment for Cincinnati, and I know that we're going to be as ready as we can to make the strongest pitch we can to have Sundance find a new home here.
Okay. Be a lot closer for you to travel to watch it, huh?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I've been talking with film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi. You can find his latest essay on our website, wvxu.org. Thanks for being here, T.T.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.